Hello, and thank you for listening to this episode of Stonebridge Soundbites. For today's conversation, we're going to be talking about stock selection. And this really came about because each week our investment team sits down and discusses our equity strategies. We discuss our current holdings. We take a look at our research process. We do a fundamental analysis on different stocks we want to look at. And then we're also looking at market trends and economic cycles. And during these conversations, we often have a lot of discussion and some very healthy debate around what we should or should not own. This can lead to us maybe grabbing companies that we have identified as good to hold long term. It also leads to healthy discussion on companies that we want to own down the road. For today's discussion, though, I have with me Michael Dashner, CFA. He is the director of equity. I also have Ryan Medhog, who's one of our portfolio managers and a research analyst. Ryan, Mike, thanks for joining me today.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you. I'd like to add Ryan is also a recent CFA charter holder as well. He passed all three exams a little over a year ago, and so we get to add the designation to the end of his name as well. So, Ryan, once again, congratulations. Welcome to the club.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It was a long, hard-fought process.
Well, thank you both for being here. And what we really wanted to do with this is kind of open up the curtain a little bit and allow people to see what our process really looks like. So I'm just going to kick off the first question with kind of a general one here. How do we arrive at the decision to buy a certain company?
You know, that's a great question. I'm more of a big picture guy in this sense, and I'm going to rely on Ryan to do a lot of the heavy lifting here. Ryan is very, very involved in the bottom-up stage of our investment process and security selection. So you're going to be hearing from him quite a bit on how we arrive to the final decision whether to buy a stock or not. And so why don't we first start off with the bigger picture here, okay? And Ryan and I kick this back and forth. You know, we typically start with our strategy or model, but before we even get there, we like to consider the time horizon, okay? And by first considering the time horizon, we decide, are we investors or are we traders? And at Stonebridge Capital Advisors, we're long-term investors, okay? Now, it ultimately depends on our individual end clients' investment time horizon, but in general, all of our clients are still long-term investors. So before we even get into strategy, where a particular stock might fit, is it a growth stock, is it a dividend stock? We have to decide what type of investors are we. And we're not traders. We are long-term investors. So with that started, that lays out the landscape. We're going to be looking at things 3, 5, 10 plus years down the road. And so before we even get to the next step, we identify ourselves as long-term investors. So that's first off. And then the next, we're going to get into the strategy that the stock fits in. I also like to call that a mandate. And that gives us a framework and a universe of stocks we're going to focus on. Now, I'm going to hand this off to Ryan here in a second, but we were talking earlier, and when we define our mandate, it gives us the ability to focus on what's important and where we're trying to go. I liken it to a horse race. If you ever go to a horse race, or even if you see a horse on the street, typically like that police are using, they have covers over the side of their eyes. Now that's important. That allows the horse not to be distracted on what's going on the side of it that doesn't matter. It lets them focus on the track ahead. And so by defining our mandate, we're really looking at the track ahead and figuring out the best way we can get to the finish line. We're not being distracted by the horses or animals or crowd or all the nonsense that are in our periphery that don't matter in the long run. So filtering out the noise, and one of the first steps to get there is define your mandate. So Ryan, why don't you take off the next steps?
Yeah, so I think, you know, at Stonebridge we have three different equity strategies. One is the growth strategy, one is the dividend strategy, and then we have a blend of the two strategies, which is the growth and income strategy. And typically what we're looking for in each strategy, if I were to give an example of say the dividend income strategy, we're looking for companies that have an above average dividend yield within their sector, you know, and within the market more broadly. We're also looking to make sure that that company is growing their dividend. You know, a company might have a large dividend, but they're not increasing the payout. They're not increasing the dividend overall. And then another thing that we might look at would be the dividend coverage ratio. So of their dividend, how much cash flow is left over after they pay out their dividend? And that gives us an idea of how safe that dividend really is. So that being said, Michael, maybe you can walk us through, you know, kind of how we pick those companies. I think we use somewhat of a unique approach where, you know, we're not macro traders, but, you know, we are kind of also looking at the top down. Maybe you could enlighten us on Stonebridge's process there.
Sure, Ryan. As you know, we use a blended approach of a top-down and bottom-up, and let's define what that is. First of all, on a top-down, we're looking at the overall macro trend. You know, we're lucky enough to have an economist on staff, Dan Laufenberg, who gives us a reasonable idea on where we're at in the business cycle. Okay, are we in a contractionary phase? Are we getting, are we at the very beginning of an expansion phase? So that'll give us an idea of which sectors of the economy we think are going to perform well over the next business cycle. And then from there, we decide what sectors do we want to over or underweight. Okay, so we're starting from the top and working our way down, hence top down. Okay, and then after you get to the last level in there and you get to the final company, that is the fruition of the top down process. But we use a blended process. Okay, we have an idea of where we think the macro is, but then we pivot and do a bottom up analysis. We start with the company. And so we're not looking necessarily to fill holes. We want to really understand the company from the bottom up. And we're going to talk about that here briefly, what it means to understand a company and how we arrive to a final decision, whether we're going to buy it or ultimately sell it one day. But really, we're focusing on how do we get the company included in our portfolio. So let's start, Ryan, on a company. Once we identify a stock, what are the next steps?
I mean, that's... You know, one of the things that I wake up and think about every morning. But, you know, first I would say we start with what does a company do, right? What are its products? What are its services? What end markets is the company selling into, right? Within those end markets, who are its customers? Within a specific customer base, right? Is there a concentrated customer base? Could you be selling to maybe a few of the hyperscaler cloud vendors? Or is it more of a diverse, fragmented customer base? Because a lot of times, especially when we see volatility in the market and maybe some economic concerns, having a diverse customer base really can help a company have more stable revenues, stable profits. And after you move from what the company does, its products, services, and markets, customers, you can kind of move into where does the company sit in the competitive landscape of that industry. So for instance, does the company have a durable competitive advantage, or what Warren Buffett likes to refer to as a moat? What does the competitive landscape look like? Are there a lot of different competitors, right? Is it a fragmented market where maybe the company can consolidate that fragmented market share to grow their revenues faster than the overall industry is growing? Or is it a concentrated competitive landscape where maybe there's only a few players? And then after that, we also look at management. One of the things that we talk about at Stonebridge a lot is that we want to be comfortable with management. We want to make sure that, you know, they have an appropriate track record. And really, are they good stewards in our clients' capital? And after you have an idea of kind of what the company does, the competitive landscape, then we can move on to the financials. And oftentimes when we're looking at the financials, we look at it compared to historically, right? So a company versus how it's historically done, but then also versus its competitors. And some of the things we look at there are revenue growth. Is a company growing high single digits? Is it growing low single digits? How does that compare to historically? So for example, you know, I think the street has Google growing at 8% this year, but over the last 5 years, Google has grown at around, you know, 16 to 18%. So even though that's quite a high revenue growth number, it's actually come down. And then again, you can look at it versus its competitors, right? And after you look at kind of the growth of the company and you understand where that growth is coming from, you can look at the margin structure. So, you know, are there high margins? Are there low margins? If there's low margins, is there room for improvement? And again, what are the trends versus itself, but also versus competitors? So for instance, if one of your competitors is expanding margins, but you're not, is there opportunity for your company to do that, et cetera? And after revenue growth, margin structure, we look at the capital intensity of the business. How much capital does it take to generate those revenues? For some companies, say an industrial or a material, it takes quite a bit of capital intensity. Typically, shareholders kind of dock you on the valuation, right? if you take more money to run your business, you're going to have a lower multiple than a company who is very capital light. And then lastly, and one of the things Micah pointed out at our economic forum, is that we really are paying attention to balance sheet health. You know, how much debt does the company have? And oftentimes we'll look at net debt, right? Debt minus cash on the balance sheet. And then we'll also look at different leverage ratios to see, okay, this is the amount of debt they have, but how much EBITDA do they have, for example, just to give you an idea of how quickly can they pay down that debt. And then also how the company is focusing on maybe reducing leverage, any excess, you know, free cash flow that the company is generating, how is that going to kind of fund operations? And, you know, maybe a company is very focused on reducing debt, and that's something that we really like to see. And after we have an idea of what the company does, the competitive landscape, an idea of how the financials work, how the business model of the company works, then we can get to the valuation. And the valuation, you can do it a few different ways. This is really the art of the job. So typically you can do a multiple, so you can do a price to earnings multiple, right? A PE ratio. That's what most investors look at. I think that's what most clients are probably familiar with. You can also use, you know, enterprise value to EBITDA. There's a plethora of different multiples that you can look at. And again, it's versus itself historically. So for instance, you know, Google is trading at 7x next year's earnings. Over the last 5 years, it's traded at around 21 times. So that's kind of towards the lower end of the range. But then you could look at Google's PE and compare it to one of its competitors, say Meta, right? Facebook. That's also trading at 17 times. So even though it's trading at a discount to its own historic PE, it's kind of trading in line with where its peers are. And then after we get to the valuation part, that gives us a better idea of, okay, what is this stock worth, right? What is the target price that we have for the stock? Typically, it's not an exact number, right? It's kind of a range of numbers. And that kind of gives us an idea of, is this a buy, a hold, a sell? And then lastly, what is the catalyst that is going to drive the stock price to our target price? What is the catalyst that is going to make the market realize our point of view? Because oftentimes you can get to a valuation for a company and say, oh, you know, this company is trading super cheap. I think it should trade instead of at 11 times earnings, it should trade at 16 or 17 times earnings. But oftentimes there's no catalyst on the horizon that's going to make the street, make the market realize that higher multiple. I mean, oftentimes we call that a value trap. But maybe this would be a point, Michael, where you can kind of help us identify or flesh out the idea of, when are we thinking of buying a stock? How are we thinking of sizing that position? And just give us a little more clarity there.
Sure, Ryan. So let's first tackle, when would we potentially buy it? You did a great job on laying out what we're looking for. And so let's say we get down to that decided upon price range where we think its terminal value is. And if it's trading significantly below that, you know, that puts it to the front of the line on, okay, this is an attractive company and it's an attractive buying price that we think the benefits outweigh the risks. Now, this is a moving target, like Ryan said, and this is really when the art comes into it. This is not an exact science. I will say we are very, very patient. Once we find a company, we do like to give it a few quarters and actually get on and listen to the conference calls. We want to read the transcripts from management. We want to find out as much about the company and how it sits in its current market as we can, okay? So I like the phrase, I would rather be late and right than early and wrong. So just as our investment time horizon is long, we want to make sure we go into an investment with our eyes wide open. At the end of the day, we're still representing our clients and we're investing our clients' money that they work their entire lives for. And we take that very, very seriously on every investment decision we make. Because again, at Stonebridge, we have a fiduciary responsibility, but it really is our core mission to represent our clients' best interests at the end of the day. And we take that and we remind ourselves that on every single stock or bond or any other security that we decide to invest in, this is very, very important to our end investor, okay? So let's say we identify a stock in a range we would potentially like to buy it in. If it hits that level, then we will initiate a purchase, okay? But again, our volume is not extraordinary. Our turnover is very, very small. And so when we decide to make that buy, we are in for the long haul. And so we take this very, very seriously. The second part of Ryan's question was sizing Okay. So as portfolio managers, one of the most important ways to control risk in a portfolio, you hear us talk about it time and time again, is diversification. So normally, you know, you want to keep your positions appropriate size. So if your thesis doesn't work out or an unexpected event happens, it doesn't completely disrupt the portfolio. However, that does not mean every position needs to be the same size. Often, investment strategies and managers compare themselves to a benchmark. Okay, the most famous benchmark to use, at least in the United States, is the S&P 500. And it's important to note that the S&P 500 is an asset-weighted benchmark, not an equal-weighted benchmark, meaning some companies inside the S&P 500 will have a 5 or 6% exposure. Others will have a 19 basis point exposure. So when we're talking about putting a company in our portfolio, one, we have to think about our client and the diversification. And then two, we have to think about that security's exposure in the S&P 500. And when you differ substantially from the benchmark's exposure, you have what's called an active weight. So if you had a 1% position in Apple, you're underweight 5 to 6% of the Apple's exposure in the S&P 500. So if you start to compare your performance to the S&P 500 and you have a dramatic underweight in Apple, that could start to cause some holes later on. Now, this is the more institutional side. Our clients, end clients, they shouldn't be so concerned with underperformance or outperformance from the S&P 500. They should be concerned with what are their investment objectives and are we staying inside the risk tolerance to get there. However, it is still very important to use a benchmark to make sure your investment manager isn't going entirely out of bounds. Because if there are dramatic divergences from the benchmark, then there's a reasonable chance the strategy isn't doing what you intended it on doing. So while we say we're client first, benchmark second, we still believe a benchmark is very, very important to compare ourselves to make sure we are succeeding and achieving the client's goals. So that was sizing, and we could go on for a long time about appropriate size. And that actually leads to an interesting view in our team discussion, because it is not 100% agreement. We have very, very intense, I'll say, discussions, and I have my hands up in quotes, on what the appropriate size of security might be in a client's portfolio. And I view the disagreement to be very, very healthy. We don't want a team full of yes men or women. We want to make sure that we have really good discussion and people are coming at it from all walks of life and bringing their professional perspective, because that is how we make a team that best suits our clients.
Yeah, Mike, and that's a really good point. I think we have a very unique team that's built with different people from different backgrounds, different skill sets, and they've all come to Stonebridge to have that ability to really get involved in the process of selecting stocks and even selecting bonds, which we'll talk about in a later episode. And so those conversations that I get to hear and see are very interesting, because you have people with very different viewpoints coming in, bringing in something that maybe we haven't even thought of about a company that we're looking at, bringing their knowledge or their background to that. So very, very interesting process. Mike, Ryan, I'm not sure, is there anything else we wanted to talk about? I think we covered quite a bit in this conversation here.
Yeah, I think Ryan did a great job on walking through how we look at companies and their potential inclusion in portfolios. But yeah, I think before we get in the weeds any further, we should pause and pick this up at a later date.
Yeah, I want to thank you both very much for joining me, Michael and Ryan. To all our audience out there who's listening, thank you so much. If this does spark something in you to go, I got to call Stonebridge, I got to talk with somebody, we love it. That's exactly what we're here for. It's something we love to do, is talk with our clients about the things we're doing and really helping them understand and give that transparency into what we do and how we do it. So please feel free to give us a call, 651-251-1000. We'll set up a meeting and we'll chat a little bit. Thank you very much and have an excellent day.